Nietzsche used to say, wherever I go, a dog follows me called ego. I hope I left the dog a little bit outside. My journeys to India started when I was still very young, maybe 18 years. And I do remember that my first journey was very adventurous. We had purchased two city buses and had driven them from Germany to over Afghanistan and Persia and the Hindu Kush into India. I may stand up so that all of you can see my faces. I think you are wondering how will I look, and this is how I look. You may discuss this. Yes. So I was. My first contact with the river Ganga was almost ending in a traumatic accident. There was a bridge over the Ganga, which was maybe two days' journey from where we arrived at the Ganga. And we didn't simply have these 2 days. We were announced to come in a city and deliver a big engagement with music and with talk. And so we just couldn't spare this 2 days. We were a little late. And I remember the only ferry which I saw was something which was an imitation of a ferry. You know, they had put these big tons together which are used to keep the tar inside, the tar for roads. And they had somehow built a cluster of them and a little wood over it. And when we asked ferry, they showed on this contraption. And it took a whole village, really, to finally bring our bus onto this barrel ferry. And when we drove over the Ganga, so much Ganga water was on the top of the ferry. In other words, the ferry was traveling not underground, but underwater. And finally, with another village on the other side, we managed to take the bus off the ferry and then on the land. The next thing which came after us was the truck. And when the truck wanted to come on the land, it went a little bit back, and the whole so-called ferry began to come up like a untamed Mustang, I think we say in America, and the truck disappeared in the floods. So my first contact with spiritual India was rather, I was really unprepared for what would happen. The second journey, I decided to go into a pilgrimage of the Himalayas. And there I began to understand something of the charm of both these sacred mountains and the river Ganga, which originated from Gangotri, a place within the Himalaya mountains. So I was very, very happy to be there. And today I want to share about this sacred mountain with all of you. I would like to particularly focus on the Ganga, the river Ganga, which comes out of this mountain, the river whom I first experienced as a very tough mother, because she devoured a truck with everyone in it right before my eyes. You can understand the Ganga on different levels of perception. You could understand it simply as water, H2O. Or you could understand it as a river which is sacred to millions of Hindus. Another way to understand the Ganga would be to understand it as spiritual waters. Now, all these different perceptions are true, with the exception that one is deeper than the other. I would like to give you an example. I could understand a book. It's just a weight which is used to, on the other side of a scale, to maybe weigh some vegetables. I've seen this in Indian marketplaces, that books were used to, as a weight by the mercantile people. But another understanding of the book would be when you know reading and you can understand the fascinating story which is encaptured within the pages of the book. So the Ganga, which is in the sacred mountain, can be understood in a similar way. Yes, for some people it can be just water, H2O, but for others the Ganga can have very, very deep messages. I do not know if you have heard about this experiment, which was done by a scientist in Japan, who just had different sounds projected on water. Dr. Emoto is his name. I talked last week about it in the university. There was another group of people. Well, it's interesting. Dr. Emoto had people, for instance, play some music on the water, then he froze the water to a degree of -4 Celsius, took some chips of ice from it and investigated them with a very expensive microscope to find out some structure, if there were some structures. And he did find out something which was startling to the community of scientists. What he found out was that certain music created very crystalline forms, almost like the forms in snowflakes, whereas other music created chaos vibrations. For instance, he had this, I do not know how to call it in English, it's called death metal or crash metal or so on, and went like and he really felt he saw it really looked disorderly, but when he had a mantra, like for instance the sacred syllable Om, then there were very crystalline functions. So what I would like to suggest is that water can carry an information, almost like a book can carry an information, especially when it's sacred water, but only the one who knows to read it or to listen will be able to hear it properly. Who of you knows my German compatriot Hermann Hesse? Oh, he's read in among students still. Good. Hermann Hesse wrote this book, Siddhartha, and the book describes a person who looks for truth. He leaves his home in search for the quest, and he finally arrives at in a little garden of a Buddha and listens to the teachings of the enlightened one. But he decides that he would like to really listen not to a formulated teaching, something which might be like a dogma. No, he wants to listen to life itself, and therefore leaves the enlightened one and his teachings to go right into the life. He goes to the woman who is practiced in the art of the flesh, Kamala, then lives a very worldly life, and after some time goes on, leaves that life of the ants, that ant-like life, he says, behind, to go into to go to a river, and there he learns from Vasudev, the ferryman. Vasudev tells him he must listen to the river, and that river will be able to enlighten him. And here I will read to you now a little bit about what Siddhartha heard. First of all, he listens. I will try to read it with the passion of someone who has devoured almost all of Hesse's books before I started my monk life, and it is very beautiful. Siddhartha listened. He was now all ears, utterly engrossed in listening, utterly empty, utterly absorbing. He felt he had now learned all there was to know about listening. He had often heard all these things, these many voices in the river, but today it all sounded new. He could no longer distinguish the many voices, the cheerful from the weeping, the children's from the man's. They all belong together. The lament of the knower's yearning and laughing, the screaming of the angry, the moaning of the dying. Everything was one. Everything was entwined and entwisted, was interwoven a thousandfold. And all of it together, all voices, all goals, all yearnings, all sufferings, all pleasures, all good and all evil. The world was everything together. Everything together was the river of events, was the music of life. And when Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, listened to the song of a thousand voices, when he did not listen to sorrow or laughter, when he did not bind his soul to any one voice, and did not enter them with his ego, but listened to all of them, heard the wholeness, the oneness, then the great song of the thousand voices consisted of a single word. Word, which was Om, perfection. Do you hear? Vasudev's eyes asked again. Yes, so I wanted to just read you from another German something about which he wanted to bring to people. We are so much absorbed very often in the objects of the world, forgetting totally the one who perceives it, or the perception. Our rooms are so full, our rooms of the mind are so full with objects, with plans, that we do forget the room which holds them all, ourselves and our soul. So I would like to now show you, or take you on a journey where we will try to listen a little bit to the river Ganga. The first thing we will listen to is the message of death. The next will be very good messages. The message of abundance, of joy, and of enlightenment. We will carry this. We brought also our own music here. I hope it will work. We will start our journey in Varanasi and then travel upwards the sacred river. Many, many people in India take their sacred bath in the Ganga while a Brahmana Pandit chants mantras. On this boat, I found the most amazing yogi I have met so far. Although he has a very peaceful lodging, you can say, he goes every day to meditate in the midst of the most busiest traffic session. You can see his hair is all full with the soot which comes from the cars. When I asked him why he goes there for meditation and not in the peaceful, and doesn't meditate in the peaceful environment, he says he wants to become still and peaceful even in a hectic environment. I think when he has learned it, he should give classes how to do this in the New York University. But you hear, when you are in Varanasi, people like this carrying the recently deceased relative and singing Jai Sri Rama Nama Satya Hai, only the Supreme is real. Death forces us to think about our own mortality. Look at all these people who have gone, who are now in the past, somewhere. Here is Gandhi, I believe. The living are in a minority, really. There is a ghat, or a burning place, where many, many tourists have even felt a sort of enlightenment, you could say, by just watching one person after the other being brought on the woods and being burned. In Varanasi, people take care about death. They don't run away from it like we sometimes do on our graveyards, where the person who died looks more living than he ever lived in his real life after he has been ornamented and balmed and so on. No, there people turn their faces to this mortality, and even a goat gets counsel and help to go on. I always joke, somewhere here is my wood. I hope it's somewhere here. But I don't know, maybe it's here. People in Varanasi go often into monasteries, which are something like the spiritual universities. We will now go from Varanasi by train into the mountains. This is the beginning of the Himalayas in Rishikesh. Each evening in Rishikesh, people gather in large numbers to celebrate Ganga in a festival of joy. When the moon rises, when it's getting dark, they offer an aratik, a ceremony. And really, thousands of people, if not 10,000 of people, do participate in this. They want to communicate with Ganga and even bring her flowers. Like when you go to your friend's house, you bring some flowers. This was in the night, I'm sorry that it's a little dark. So here a whole basket of flowers with light is offered to the Ganga, because people want to celebrate a relationship. Oh, this I must tell you about this. This is a living advertisement. This is called Chotiwala, this restaurant. The small guy, you would say in America. And this is the small guy who shows by his forthcoming belly that this restaurant offers good food, which will make you, which will nourish you sufficiently. And note the Indian simplicity. Don't touch, it says the sign here. If they would put me, I would not be a good advertisement for the restaurant. So from there we were ready to enter the Himalayan mountains. I'm doing some. This is called the various yoga, because a very strenuous journey was lying ahead of us, and I'm trying to get ready for it. On the way into the Himalayas, we passed this yogi who has not slept for 32 years. When he feels tired, he just leans on this swing-like thing. Why is he doing this? He does it because he feels by taking up voluntary austerity, he will become a little bit stronger in his life. Not physically, but mentally. And now we are ready. We pass these terrace-like fields and we follow the course of the Ganga into the Himalayas. I always like to take photos of these wonderful and very particular looking people. Our jeep very often gave up its spirits, so we had to try our little, I mean, this our driver jeep, he tried his little knowledge. Then we arrived at a place from where we could not continue by jeep. We had to go by foot. This is the cook who came along with us. And this is Yamaraj, the dog, who joined us. We saw whole families going up in a happy song, their whole possessions on a in a little bag on their head. You see us here, this is Yamaraj, the dog. Now, as we were sitting next to these sacred rivers, and this is a yoga teacher from Switzerland, and absorbing our thoughts, no, our listening into it, we learned to hear the song of the river, the song of nature, which keeps everything together, which is ultimately a vibration, as they, you know, which oscillates in different frequencies. That you can very nicely experience, and therefore these sacred rivers are places where it's nice to sit and just go inside of you to learn to listen. And here's the path which has been treated by thousands of pilgrims. Maybe you feel some attraction to it. It's not according to U.S. federal safety rules, this path. This is the Yamuna, the little, how would you say, it's not even a village, the guest's house near the source of Yamuna. I will go a little. Oops, we are not properly dressed here. We just crossed over the cold water, and here luckily some hot springs so that we can warm up our frozen feet and legs. But there is something like a tank of water where you can, which is warm, and which is also like a think tank. You know, when you are at these places and meet these wonderful people, all they talk about is philosophy. For the ladies, there's another tank just nearby, but I did not photograph it for, to not disturb them in their talk. And from there, we went, this was the river Yamuna in the Himalayas. We went to another river, the river of Ganga. I told you a little bit about this amazing river. Here's a village, Gangotri. I heard that the raging water of the river took down my previous hermitage, that is this here. It's no longer standing. The water came just and flooded it after the monsoon. For your orientation, this is the temple which we will see soon. And here, where this dot is, you continue on this path for about, I would say, 700 meters. And then you go up here the mountain and meet the yogi in the cave, who's still there waiting for me. We became friendly, and if you want to meet him, he will also receive you. So this is just an orientation. We will now go to these places. This is the very wonderful temple. When there are ceremonies, this whole place, which extends up to here, is full with people who sing, particularly in the evenings and in the morning hours. Only for 6 months out of a year can this temple be visited. The other 6 months it is snowed in, sometimes up till here, I heard. And the deities and the divinities are brought a few thousand meters down to another temple. Everyone has to clear this area by around October, beginning of November, when the snowfall comes, and only after 6 months are they permitted to return, except for the yogis. You will see some of them. Here I met one yogi who, of all things, was an export-import manager before. He is here behind the birch tree. And I asked him different questions about the life of renunciation, like how does he eat and so on and so forth. And then he was so kind to invite me to stay for a day in his cave to experience the life of a hermit. And it was the best time I ever had. As I sat here, first a cobra snake came to inspect me, then an eagle, and finally something like a grizzly bear. I don't think it's a grizzly. They wanted to check out if I was in tune with nature and heard if I had a peaceful and unagitated demeanor. They accepted me within their fold. Here is the central heating system of the cage. Some yogis need that. That's the kitchen. It's not according to American standards. And finally, this is where he sleeps. By the way, this is a Hilton Sheraton cave. It is really a luxurious thing. Because this yogi, as he told me, had started this life only since 2 years, and he needed a little comfort like that. But my dear people, although this may sound a little bit austere for us who are used hot water and shaving cream, when you are in this environment and your mind comes to peace and connects your soul, you feel just so entirely happy that you really feel when you look down from there into your life in in the cities, that you feel these are big ant hills with a lot of activity, meaning not much more than eating, sleeping, defending and mating. So I learned this when the eagle looked at me from here. He landed here, perched on this branch, inspecting me very carefully. I felt very much, oh, this is very good. I learned to be, to see myself as a member of the great family of souls, of living beings, who really join in their one connection to the Supreme. Life in the Himalayas is not always easy. Sometimes the mountains breathe and sometimes they shake, and as a result big boulders or rocks fall down and go into the river. They missed this hermitage here. Here's another one who came. I asked the yogi how he dealt with this unexpected disturbances. Bears plundering his winter storages, which he needs to survive the winter. Mountain quakes. There's earthquakes and there are mountain quakes. And he said, well, in the beginning one is worried, but after some time one understands that there are laws which govern our own life. Laws of karma. If it's not your karma, then you, karma means destiny, you will always survive. And if it's your karma, a piano will fall on your head in the big city, Delhi. That was his answer. And it'd kill you. Huh? So enough with this serious talk, we will now walk. Oh, this rhymes. Here is our path. Here another. You have to finish your walking by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because at that time the Himalaya storms start to grow in intensity. I had started late, so I needed to take some shelter here in this little shelter. I believe it was a shelter because I saw that people had sat there before me. Then when my strength had returned, I could continue. Look, here was just an avalanche. These mountains came down when I just passed them. Let us look at some people who live there. I don't believe that he lives there. They will come later, those who live here. This was a pilgrim just like we were pilgrims. This is a person who lived there, a yogi. I told him, could I photograph you? I would like to see, to show the people in the West a yogi. And he immediately raised his hands for blessings. I thought he was a very elegant man who had found an interesting solution how to bind his hair, something which maybe our lady audience might like to adopt. Look, everything is old on this pilgrim except for his beautiful socks. The last station before these mountains is called Bhagirath 1, Bhagirath 2, Bhagirath 3. I mean, those who gave names to these mountains were not very creative. I mean. This is our last station before. One tip if you go there, please don't do the mistake I did. I just walked up and then I was so tired, I ate a huge thing with pasta, and then I went to sleep, and when I woke up I felt as if I was outside of the body, you know, high altitude sickness. I spent the whole night in the bathroom to entrust whatever was inside my body to the law of gravitation. So when you arrive, always please walk up and down to acclimatize the body to the newfound heights. Here's an ashram. This is a very ashram means where monks live. Don't be afraid of him. He is dressed like a bear. It's just a little cold for him. He comes from Calcutta, where it's very warm. He's the leader of the ashram, and is very hospitable. Very hospitable. I really had to say. So after 2 days of rest, one day was the bathroom night, and the second I needed a real night. Then we continued onwards to come to the source of the Ganga. And here now it will become a little bit mystical. Please fasten your seat belts. The Ganga comes all of a sudden out of this, they call it Gomukh, the mouth of the cow. It's an opening within the glacier, which looks very similar to the, for me at least, to the mouth of the cow. What is surprising is that the water of this Ganga has amazing properties which you cannot find in any other water of the world. One property, for instance, is that you can have a cholera bacteria and put this in a 2-liter glass. You can just put it full, and after half a day, all the cholera bacteria have died. It's, in other words, very antiseptic. The water does not come from the glacier. No. And there is no spring which has so far been discovered. From where does the water Ganga come? Well, we will attempt to give an explanation in a little while. A few more slides will come. But for now, many people have a great appreciation of the Ganga, and although it's cold, take a sacred bath here. I don't know how inviting it looks for you. he is certainly not praying only out of spirituality. I think he wants to get quickly out of the water. He's clearly a little cold. I also went into the Ganga, that's me here, and I just took my bath here. And afterwards, I felt very heavy in the soul, but the body I had to put on a rock, and a warm rock, and wait for half an hour like a snake, you know, which is too cold. Or how do you call these small lizards? Yeah, a lizard, to warm up again. But it's a really very wonderful experience. From there, we went over the glacier to find out the source of the Ganga. We had a guide because we had heard it's dangerous due to the different, please help me, what is it? It's not an abyss, it's like it goes down in the glacier.
Crevice.
That sounds correct. Ravine? Something like this, crevice or ravine. We had a guide, but of course he was gone after half an hour. He was so fast that we had to find our way on our own. It goes higher and higher and higher. Here some people are resting, which went up before us. And we passed this most beautiful mountain. It's called the Shiva Lingam. Look how extremely beautiful this is. What to say about mountains? Just like sacred rivers can tell their stories to those who know how to read them. Mountains also do have their particular wisdom to share. This was Shiva and this was Gauri Parvat. Shiva Lingam on the left and Gauri Parvat on the right. Here I'm climbing higher and higher. I was not so properly dressed for the occasion, but nevertheless, what to do with an adventurous spirit? He has to go beyond his limitations. We go higher. Our tracks. Then I had to change into trousers. I'm kidding. I stayed here. I'm not so crazy. A little, you are students, a little joking is required. So, from where does the river Ganga come? I will now attempt a traditional explanation. In the old texts of Vedic India, Ganga is compared with a beautiful lady who was once beckoned to come to spread her blessings on the earth. And she came in an energetic form. Ladies sometimes mean energy. She came in an energetic form down to planet Earth and then manifested herself here. So the place where this happened, according to the ancient texts, is Akash Ganga. Akash means the sky. Ganga, who came out of the sky and who materialized from the state of energy into physical substance. That's here. That's how the texts describe it. I only want to say it to be complete in my explanation. This is the wonderful Ganga Falls. This picture is not so good, but a human being would be, in comparison, a little bit like, you see this white spot, please? Mm-hmm. Double the size of it. That would be a human being. Here we did a few ancient ceremonies at Akash Ganga. This is my long year, the person who traveled for long time with me in the Himalayas. I once showed this photo, and then, do you know Birkenstock shoes in America?
Yes.
You do know. Then there was a high agent of the Birkenstock factory and said, give us this photo, we give you $10,000, we will use it for advertisement that Birkenstocks carry you everywhere. But I politely declined the offer because I felt, yes, things should stay where they belong. This is more a spiritual adventure. Here again the Shiva Lingam. When you get lost in the mountains, look out for these flags because they indicate the residences of yogis. Here is a yogi, Kamal Bihari, who lives in the snow in an altitude of 6,500 meters. He lives there the whole year. Now, and he's bare-chested. When I went, we somehow became friendly with each other. And he decided to accompany me on my downward climb or descent, I believe it's called. And as we came into warmer and warmer temperatures, and I had to take away my jacket and then my pullover, he started to dress first in a little pullover and then in this blanket. And I asked him, "Tamal Bihari, it's in the cold you are bare-chested and in the warmth you are dressed against cold. Has your mechanism switched?" And he said, no, you don't understand. I take my energy out of the air. In Sanskrit they will say the word prana, the subtle energy in the prana. But the air is so much polluted when you go downstairs that you don't find any prana. You only find this subtle energy from 5,000 up higher, 5,000 meters. Do we measure in America in meters, altitude? Or meters we don't know?
Feet.
What is...
15,000 feet.
Thank you very much. So he lives at 17,000 feet or... Tamal Bihari. Here he is again with another yogi. We stayed here. It was wonderful. Yes, this is almost my last picture. This yogi has a very first class pair of glasses. He is knitting. He is a knitting expert. Maybe the ladies want to learn from him. A knitting expert. And I asked him, "You have renounced everything except for knitting. What is your fascination with knitting?" And he says to me, "Sachinandan Swami, knitting teaches me how everything is interwoven in the and twisted and entwined, as Hesse would say, in the great fabric of life. And I am living here and I want to remember this. And would you have like to have a piece of my collection?" I said, "No, you may keep your, it's cold up here." My dear audience, from the river of Ganga, when we learn to listen very carefully, we get a lesson of simplicity. And let us not forget the first lesson. We learn a lesson that we are for a short time here only in this world, and that it is very good if we can use this time for self-realization and not for entanglement in unnecessary pursuits. I have personally, I've written a book about it. Up till now it's only in German language, but they work now on the translation into the sweet English language or American language. It will be called The Way, or the English title is The Way of the Great Departure. And if you like to get it, you might find it in bookstores or with Radha Vallabha, who is holding these conferences here in your hospitable university. I was very happy to share my own journey today with you. I understand that we have still the joy of which our singer was speaking before us. That is the mountain of food. Something will happen with it. And I want to now thank you very, very much. All the best for you.